This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 3, TARDIS Cricket. It's a lively one this week. As we talk about setting a target, batting first, how do you avoid the mistakes of that? We think about playing spin, and we relate it to Doctor Who. And Gerrard introduces us to pressure mountains. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's time for this week's edition of the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to playing better cricket or coaching better cricket if you're of that bent as well. My name is David Hinchliffe. I'm going to be running things today, but helping me out and helping out all the people with the problems this week, it is, of course, the man who is with me every week, Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School, Mark Garraway. Welcome, Garras.
Good morning to you. How are you, right?
Good morning, afternoon, or evening. Delete as appropriate.
That's correct.
And, of course, we have Sam Lavery, who is also on the line. He is our occasional correspondent, but always ready with a tip, a trick, or a piece of advice to help you out. Welcome, Sam.
Hello. I'll go with hello today to avoid any time zone issues.
Hello. Yep, that works. Bienvenue. Willkommen. I don't know how many German listeners we've got. I think that's quite low. Well, let's talk about some one-day cricket, because there's been some one-day cricket being played around the world. And one of the things I've noticed about the India against New Zealand series that's been going on at the moment, not only that New Zealand have been doing brilliantly against the former number one side in the world, but also that there's been some problems around setting targets and batting first. So I thought that might be quite an interesting topic that we could talk around. How do you decide what a good target is? What happens if you're under aiming? What happens if you're overshooting?
Well, I think it's an art. Generally, if you're going to become masterful at something, you need to practice it a lot. And one of the challenges that all teams have with the 50-over game is that there's always little changes to the guidelines and how the game is played. So, for example, sides batting first have struggled a little bit to know exactly where to go with it since the regulation came in that means that there's only four men outside the circle for a vast majority of the game. And we've discussed on this show the impact that that's had on lower order batting, the impact that it's had on scoring in those middle phases. But also when you're batting first, you know, it's very difficult to assess that because people haven't had enough practice at it in those regulations. So I don't think that the ever-changing regs are helping people get good at this. And I'm interested in it now. I just wonder whether people are just going to go out hard and accept in a five-match series or in a four-match series or whatever that they might get it wrong once. But I'd certainly, as a coach, and this is down to preference, I'd certainly in a four-match or five-match series encourage my side just to go out hard. And if we get it wrong in a four-down for diddly squat in one game, then we'll just write that off as the one that we get wrong.
There's also a difference, isn't there, between caution, being cautious, being aggressive, and not being confident in your ability to get a target, whatever you think that is.
Yeah, just going back to what Gareth says very quickly, I kind of agree with him to a degree in the going hard. I think if you've got a five-match series, as he said, then you've got to back yourself that if you're going to produce the goods three times out of five. The obvious downfall of that is when you come to a knockout situation in a tournament, which is ultimately where the important stuff happens. And it's are you willing to accept that format of playing when it comes to a knockout straight one-on-one match? I think one of the things you often refer to is experience and how people with experience seem to be more effective in certain situations. And every time you get rule changes like this, everyone's on a level playing field again. People don't have experience. The situation's new. People don't know how the game will pan out, as Gareth alluded to earlier on.
Sam has made a great point there about that knockout situation, and that's what most club players are facing week in, week out, because they don't get to play against the same opposition as India and New Zealand are at this present moment in time. So I think it's a really, really good shout on that one. And I wonder, on flat pitches or pitches that you know last last the distance, whether with the new rule changes and the adaptation that's required in setting up those targets, whether batting second is better nowadays than it would have been under the previous guidelines. It would be an interesting one to run some stats on.
Do you think that there's a correlation between the standard of cricket that is being played and the amount of caution that you see when a side is setting a target?
I would say that there probably is. I think one of the things that when you compare the standard of play, you in club cricket you don't invariably get seven batters who are confident in their ability to play a pivotal innings in a game. And one of the things obviously in international cricket is you get seven international cricketers as a batter. And I think it's an interesting topic. I think it's unsure of what to say and whether to sort of commit one way or the other. And one of the stats that I looked at was that the highest 50 of the highest scores batting first. I think it was three or four of them. Sorry, 50 of the highest scores of all time in one day cricket. Only three of them or four of them were ever batting second. However, if you shift that to a day night situation, that changes quite dramatically. I know, and I wonder what the stats are since the two ball format has come in, and I wonder if that's shifted even more, which I would imagine it has done. It's one we should be keeping up with, I guess.
But it's difficult, though, isn't it, stats-wise? You know, when things are changing and regulations are changing all of the time, basically the previous stats that we had then become irrelevant, and we need to create enough games so that it gives you enough field of matches to make any assumptions or any conclusions from those stats, you know, relevant, really. And that's where, I suppose, for the first time in a while, I think we've got a format of cricket that's quite exciting to watch, which is one of the ICC's big things in 50-over cricket. And it would be fantastic if we committed to this set of regulations, not just up until the next World Cup, but actually for two or three years beyond that, before we then look to review it to see how it's gone. Then we'll see some real quality play, and probably we'll see sides getting better at batting first and setting that target. But I'd like to see a period of calm as opposed to you know, several rule changes over the next 4 years.
And I guess that's where you get an advantage at a lower level. If you're playing at a lower level where changes don't tend to happen as often. I know, for example, that the league that I play in, they've only made two changes in all the time that I've been playing in this particular league, which is it'll be my seventh season. And they've only made two changes, and that's to introduce a fielding circle and to change the start time. So I guess in that way, you tend to know then if you're playing on similar pitches every year and you're playing in the same format every year, you have an advantage over international level where players aren't quite sure what's happening because the regulations are changing from year to year.
There must have been uproar in South Wales.
What, the introduction of a fielding circle?
Well, the batters will be happy about that one. I don't know about the bowlers.
Well, don't even start me on that. I've got a whole series of opinions on that. But I mean, it's a little bit late to be talking about the introduction of fielding circles, isn't it? I think the horse has bolted on that one.
Absolutely. and for the right reasons as well.
Okay, let's wrap up the introduction with our traditional yes-no round. Three questions that Garas and Lavers, you can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more that you want to say. I'll be in charge of reading the questions this week. First question. Unless you're a mystery spinner, you're stuck as a defensive option these days.
No.
No.
Second question. Speed wins the race.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question. International cricket should have promotion and relegation.
Yes.
Absolutely yes.
Oh, even if it compromises the Ashes?
It's a yes-no round.
Time now for the mailbag, and of course every week there's two questions, and those questions get answered by the panel, and hopefully you get an answer to a cricketing problem that's been plaguing you, and also you get to win a prize. So the best question of the week is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com, and you can find out more by heading over to the website. And if you want to send in your question and have a chance to win a prize, you can do so by emailing us on coach@pitchvision.com. So we've got the first question this week from Ricky. And Ricky says, when batters go out to face spin bowling, should they have a plan? And what sort of plan should it be? Should it be something like, if he tosses it up, I'm going to use my feet and get to the ball. And if he drops it short, I'm going to get deep and work it in the crease and work it around? Or should it be a little more complex? So the plan for batting against spin, where do you start? You've got a young player, he's a bit confused about what he needs to do next. Where do you start when you're planning these type of things?
To start it off, though, I would say we don't want to remove the element of instinct, and we want to try and keep people playing as naturally as possible. So maintaining their instinct of how they're going to play, especially with stronger cricketers, they have good instincts generally, they've played at a high level, they make good decisions, so we don't want to remove that. However, there can be a little bit of an element of pre-planning and thinking that we can introduce to the situation. Yes, if it's pitched up, we're probably going to move down the ground and hit it, or if it's short, we're going to go back. But obviously, there's a bit more to it the higher the level you get. We should also be considering a few things like just how much is the guy spinning the ball? I mean, if he's not spinning the ball at all, then it increases your safety net in terms of moving down the pitch. Again, if the shape of the ground or the pitch is very short straight, then you may be more inclined to use that or more inclined to try and put the ball in that direction.
Sam, I've got a follow-up question about what you said at the beginning of that about saying, the basic position of getting as far forward as you can when you're playing forward and getting far back when you're playing back. Is that something that specifically a coach should be looking at with a young player from very early on, looking at playing spin as a different set of skills from playing seam-up bowling right from the beginning?
It's difficult when you talk about young cricketers, because young cricketers want to be successful, and you can build quite a successful game as a young cricketer around standing still and just waiting for the bad ball. So as a young cricketer, if you're going to be productive, running down the pitch and trying to use advanced or adult skills can often cause more trouble than they're worth, because invariably spinners are going to bowl you one or two bad balls and over at a young age. And if you can put those two away without risk, then you may say in certain game situations, then it's not worth utilising these skills. I'd always look to develop skills and encourage skills from a young age so that they are prepared and ready to go when it comes to the cricketer getting to 14, 15, 16, 17, or however old when they start to play at a more advanced level. But as long as they're aware of how to implement them as well, because at a young age, it's a slightly different ball game.
You can be a bit more traditional with it, is what you're saying. Because you know you're going to get a long hop, you know you're going to get a half volley, you don't have to come up with any creative ways to score, because you know that there's going to be a couple of bad balls coming up, and you can play an orthodox drive, an orthodox pull shot, and not have to worry too much about anything else. It's only when you get more advanced you have to start thinking more about plans.
Yeah, really. I mean, if I'm coaching a game and one of the guys is playing against a bowler who is bowling tidily and he's tying him down, and he then advances and gets out stumped because he's trying to put the guy off his length because he's struggling to score, then you walk off and say, well, you've gone there with a plan of trying to put a bowler off his length and trying to create an opportunity when opportunities aren't there. But if the guy was bowling two bad balls and over, and he's then tried to create an opportunity when there was no need to try and create an opportunity because they were already being handed to him on a plate, then I'd question his decision making in playing a shot like that.
But Gareth, you still need to have that clarity of mind. I mean, one of the parts of the question where should it be more complex than this basic idea? Yes, it should, but you don't want to clutter your mind up with loads of different plans that you're not confident about, right?
Correct. And I think any plan, it's got to be geared around the individual themselves. Whilst we're always trying to develop, my personal preference is, if I'm working with a very young player, and I'm working with three tomorrow night who are 13, 14 years old, I've worked with them for a couple of years now. And we've worked to the get as far away from it and get as close to it as possible principle throughout the 2 years that we've been working together. And they're becoming more and more confident and competent in doing that. I think the crucial thing that you need to get across is the application of that, because it might be that they're not confident to do that in a game situation at certain times. Well, then you just adapt, don't you, effectively to what you feel confident in doing. And it's the same with any plans. You can go in there with a plan, and it's easy to come up with a plan on the balcony or a plan around your own game. But as a great Steve Waugh talked about, he played an innings in, I think it was in Madras against Cumbly, where in the first innings he played and he got a 30, which was a very pretty 30, and he had his plan. And then in the second innings, he went into bat and tried to put that same plan in place because it was around his game, and realised very, very quickly that the pitch condition had changed completely. The game situation was changing all of the time around him, and therefore he had to be adaptable. And whenever you talk to anybody about plans, whether it be businessmen to generals in armies, the plan only lasts as long as the first contact with the opposition or the circumstance that you're going into. Then the most successful people are the ones that can adapt it within their realms, within their area of reason, and adapt it accordingly. So I think we do have to develop the good things, the playing forward, playing back. I totally accept where Sam is in terms of, you know, you get more loose balls when kids are younger because spinners develop a bit later on, and you're likely to get more and more bad balls. But then that comes down to the application. So if we give them the tools from very young, and the tools that we know that are going to grow with them, and then we talk to them about application. And then when they have a plan, but it's important that you can adapt it accordingly, but within the realms of your control, then you can't go too far wrong. And then as and when they make a mistake, particularly at the younger ages, we talk about, was the plan wrong? Was your intention wrong? Or was the execution not wrong if they get it less than 100%? And then we work on each bit of that according to any given situation. So if a lad has an intention to come down the wicket and that's his drill and he's been going real well and he's been hitting them well in the match and he runs past one, then was the decision wrong? And they might say no. And okay, right, we're gonna work at the execution to get it better.
Do you think, Garrows, as well, that on-field management, so that where the player has to manage themselves and they've got to change their decisions and they've got to be flexible, that's one of the things that can be harder to teach, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I like people making mistakes on the field. I have to say, I'm quite a relaxed watcher of games nowadays. Particularly, more and more I work with younger players from the age of 11 up to 18. Because they're going to have to learn from their mistakes. And I see a lot of opposition coaches that come along and play here at Millfield, and then when I go and do some coach mentoring, that get very tight about people making mistakes. And the fact is that you encourage people to make those mistakes when they're kids and to learn from them. And I think it's a follow-up conversations about how they managed it out in the middle. And a great question that we try and ask as much as possible is, given what you just experienced, if you had a TARDIS and went back half an hour or so, but still had that experience and that learning, what would you do differently? And it's a great question to ask because you're constantly developing their thinking, as opposed to getting angry and saying, why did you do that? And that was so irresponsible. And all the things that we've all done as coaches, let's be honest, I've probably done it more than most. But nowadays, I take a slightly different slant on it because experience, good and bad, are things that are going to develop learning probably more so than any drills or any conversation that we lead when we're talking with young cricketers in particular.
And I think ultimately there will be times where they will say, I would have done the same thing again. And you get a great ball. You've got to say, look, the guys bowled me a great ball. I made the good decision. My execution was pretty good. Hats off to him. He's bowled well.
Absolutely. Yeah. But that conversation, Sam, will stop any dwelling of that, negative experience, won't it? It's just good coaching conversation, and the angry coach that paces around the boundary doesn't often have those conversations, or if they do, they have to have them after a significant period of time where they've had a chance to chill out. But I see more and more coaches nowadays not doing that. I think we're getting away from that stomping coach type person. And you can reflect and ask the question back, and often you'll come up with some really good ideas. Not you as the coach, but the player or the child or the adult themselves.
The other interesting sort of reference is, I want to say Gary Player, but it might have been Arnold Palmer or something like that, is famous. Well, I say famously, I've forgotten who it was, but missed a 5-foot putt to win a major or whatever it was. But years later, he was asked about what he felt when he missed the putt, and he genuinely said, "I don't know what you're talking about. I never missed a putt."
And, you know, there's been some really good examples of people using the similar tactics of that in all sports. And I think John McEnroe was one of the best at those, because what he didn't want to do was any mistake that he made, he didn't want it to erode at his confidence. So he deliberately blame a linesman, blame a referee, blame the sun, blame the ball pressure, or whatever the case may be, to make sure that he sort of kept his confidence really, really high. Now, I've played cricket with two or three of those, and somebody who I know pretty well as a bloke and a number of his teammates also felt that Ian Botham did that really well. So it was never his fault when he got out. It was always somebody else's. And that was just to maintain his own confidence. Now, that doesn't work for everybody at all. And in fact, probably the personality types that lends itself to are very limited. But if you've got somebody that's doing it, and as long as it isn't disrupting others around them, then it'd be interesting to see, if you just let them get on with it, what the outcome would be.
It would be interesting to see how they partnered up with the review system, though, wouldn't it? Then blame it on the umpire and then say, I'll review that because I'm not wrong. And then, and then find himself wasting a review.
Can you imagine Beefy with the review system? I reckon if he was bowling, I reckon every test match within four overs, you wouldn't have any left, would you?
Okay, let's move on. This has been a great discussion, but we need to move on. Time is pressing. So hopefully, Ricky, there's something in there that you can use. And let's go on to Gautam's question. Gautam says, I've heard cricket pros say things like, Test cricket is a different ball game from One Day Internationals and T20. What are the differences between 2020 One Day and Test cricket? Now, gents, I'm thinking here beyond the the basics of the games are longer / shorter. But what are the differences when it comes to coaching? What are the differences when it comes to playing beyond the obvious?
I would say tempo is the biggest difference. Patience linked to that tempo is also different, because obviously in test match cricket, you know, it's a more attritional game, even though we're scoring at faster rates than we have previously. And I think in terms of mindset, one of the things that's the same is that people are looking to be positive now, which I think is really encouraging for cricket at all levels. You know, whether it be, it's easy to do it in 2020, I suppose, you're always looking to hit the ball out the park or whatever, but we're seeing more and more of that in tests. So if there's ever been a time where there have been similarities rather than differences, I think we're in it. But even so, there are differences in tempo which affect the way that we have to coach. And going back to that word adaptable from the first question, the guys that are most successful in all of these games are the most adaptable. And what we're finding now is that particularly in batting, we're beginning to get a split between guys that are successful in test cricket and successful in 2020 cricket. And we're either seeing people that can do test in one day very well, or we're seeing people that can do 50 over and 2020 cricket really well. But for the first time, we're not seeing many that are going across the three. And you look at the top 10s in the world rankings, there's one, possibly two people every now and again that feature in all three of them, even though they're in good nick, only featuring, you know, there's only two of them that feature in all three. Whereas at the start of the 2020 one day and test cricket rankings, when they're all together, we saw quite strong correlations between guys that could do it across all three. So and the difference to me is tempo, and also then, you know, your practice needs to be geared towards the ones that you're going to specialize in, which is what we're seeing with people like, you know, Joss Butler and Owen Morgan.
Would you transfer that into bowlers as much, or would you say that for batters it's a bigger issue, the tempo? Because tempo may not be the word you'd use for a bowler, obviously, but in the same light, there's a different skill set being used, and there's a different length of spell, and there's a different way they're going to apply themselves to their overs and to their spells in terms of getting in and out of overs differently in a 2020 than maybe they were doing a test match.
Yeah, I think it's similar in terms of the best performance, because if you look around, you know, I'm thinking back to the 2007 World Cup. We had the 2007 World Cup. Obviously, we'd just come out of an Ashes series, and the first 2020 was being held as well, coming in South Africa. We were all within the space of about a year and a half, and what we saw then was quite consistent performers in bowlers as well as batters. performing in all three formats. So, you know, your McGraths and your Lees and those sort of guys were consistent in it. Now, we're seeing less and less of that now, and I think we are getting to that stage where instead of tempo, we're probably looking at different skill sets. Mm. And, you know, you look at Malinga, as the game gets longer, Malinga's stats get less and less impressive, I suppose. He's still a good performer at test level, but he gets less impressive as the game gets longer. And we see it go both ways. You know, certain bowlers are more successful in test match cricket because their lengths are more akin to the test match length, I suppose. Bouncers, are bowled and played differently. So I don't think we're going to be at a stage where we'll have particularly fast bowlers that are consistently nailing all three formats going forward, because the game is changing in terms of the skill sets that the bowlers need to deliver.
But I was thinking about another difference between those formats is that what with the restrictiveness of the limited over 2020 and the 50 over games, are there less situations that you have to practice? You know, there's going to be certain match situations. You know, you can break them into the three main phases of a game, and you can be fairly structured in that way. Whereas in Test cricket, longer format cricket, 3-4 day cricket, anything can happen any time, and that makes it a lot more difficult to practice those range of skills.
I was almost thinking of it the other way around at first, but yeah, you might be right. Are there more situations given that conditions can change a lot more? And I suppose with Test cricket these days, the skill sets doesn't change a lot. There's still batsmen certainly utilise all the skills, although maybe not as frequently as they would do in a 2020 match. So skills are still being used in the same way. Similarly, bowlers will probably use the majority of their skills, although not in the same frequency. The big thing, as you say, is that the changing conditions, the change in the light, which probably happens more in a test match, or maybe it's not quite as, doesn't seem to be quite as quick, quite as dramatic. But there's definitely the change of physical condition as well, from being fresh to being tired throughout a day, throughout 2 days, through 5 days, etc. And the changing conditions, like you said, yeah.
Well, not only the conditions, but the situations. You know, you could have a situation. I mean, when you think of Test cricket, you think of batsmen batting, you know, batting, scoring big hundreds and, you know, long bowling spells and that kind of stuff, that which you don't see in one-day cricket. But you also get situations which would be very, very similar to one-day cricket. If someone's batting for a declaration or trying to score the winning runs in the fourth innings, so that you can have all the things that happen in one-day cricket, but then you also have the other things that only happen in the longer format cricket.
I agree with you, David. I think you've come across a real good thing there. And I always fancy myself to win a 2020 tournament as a coach, not because I was the best coach by any stretch of the imagination, but because I backed myself to practice set plays and practice set plays better than anybody else. And, you know, so we did that at Somerset, and it was at a time where probably 2020 cricket wasn't taken seriously enough by everybody. And I think everybody's doing it now. It's practicing those set plays. And that's why, you know, Faulkner can play that innings from the other night. It's not because he's an adaptable cricketer across all sorts of different things. He's just blooming good at what he does. I'm sure he can adapt, but his skill set is doing what he did the other night. And in the same way as, you know, Malinga is good at delivering those balls that he has. It's set play stuff, and the same with fielding as well. I think you can get very set played in 2020 cricket in particular. And the longer the game goes on, the more adaptable, more different circumstances come about. And we saw that the other night in the fifth ODI between Australia and England, where the pitch was the slowest that they'd encountered in the series. And as a result of that, there had to be some really quite, not test match play, but adaptable play in that middle. And I thought George Bailey, who's come under a lot of criticism over the course of the winter through the Australian press, played a fantastic innings. And that's why Test cricket is called Test cricket. It's not the same thing over and over and over again. In fact, it's a complete opposite, because so many things change throughout it. In particular, great test matches are the ones that go 5 days, the pitch condition changes, there's ebbs and flows, there's different pressure moments, pressure mountains on each player throughout that 5 day test. And that's why it's called Test cricket. And to me, it's still the best as a result of that.
Yeah, it's I agree with you. There's so much more that can happen in a test match that it just makes it a lot more fascinating to watch or to see that the game unfolding. Whereas it's a bit more disposable, isn't it? One day cricket, it's a bit more kind of roughly what's going to happen. It's just the details that you need to be fleshed out.
Yeah, and those skill sets need to be so much more comprehensive. I mean, if you're a bowler who literally can't pick up a bat and you can't get, you'll never get 10, there's still a place for you there's still a place for you in 2020 cricket where you're probably going to bat one in 4 or 1 in 5 games down at number 11. But in Test cricket, there's a reliance on everyone to pitch in all departments, really. So there's so much more going on, and there's so much more to learn and so much more to think about.
Let's head over to the soapbox because Lavis is here, so he's got.
Oh God, it's me, isn't it?
Okay, Sam. So you have 60 seconds. You can talk about anything that you like, but you have to stop at the end of the minute. But we can't interrupt you during that time, and your time starts now.
Okay, well, I just wanted to talk about developing and improving your decision-making processes, and it's maybe something that as coaches we don't spend enough time on, and it's a lot of time. In drills or in net situations, we'll be looking at batting and bowling skills. But ultimately, if we don't make good decisions while we're playing, we won't be successful, regardless of how good our skills are. So a few things to think about is just trying to introduce techniques to relax in between, so we're not mentally straining ourselves. So just switching on, switching off between balls, just to try and relax and maintain that mental energy. Secondly, trying to make as many decisions as we can in advance of each delivery, so if we make sure we're fully aware of what's going on and we can then react to the situation there. But also, as a coach, trying to test people under pressure, quickly put people into different scenarios in training, test people under physical strain as well, and make them make tough decisions when they're in a situation that's going to be relevant to a match situation that they'll be playing in.
Well, I have really enjoyed the show this week. It's been some great discussions, but our time on the internet has come to an end and we have to vanish off to our various corners of the real world. But before we go, we need to make a decision. And Gareth, you're in charge of deciding on the question of the week, which wins the prize, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. We had Ricky's question about playing spin and Gautam's question about the differences between the different formats. Which one did you prefer this week?
Well, I say it every week, but our questions, I reckon, are getting better and better. So well done, everybody, for sending those in. This week, Ricky's question is going to get the nod. I thought it was a fantastic question with enough detail, but also enough sort of latitude for us to go off on a few tangents, which we duly did.
I think the thing I love about the answers to these questions is that very, very often, by the time we get to the end of the question, I've probably got 3 or 4 more questions. I'm still thinking to myself, well, have we got any further along the line? I think you've moved down the line, but you've just opened up more possibilities of things to think about and things to do. And I think that's the hallmark of a good question, when you walk away still scratching your head because you've got even more questions than when you first started.
Correct.
Now then, if somebody wanted to get in touch with the show, send in their question, have it answered, and also win the prize, or get the chance to win the prize of the online coaching course, Gareth, what would they need to do?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. We are on Twitter at Pitch Vision Acad. That's me. And if you do a hunt around, you'll find Gareth and Labours on Twitter as well, chatting away and keeping up with the general banter. If you want to have a look at our Facebook page and send a question in that way, then you can go to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, put your question in there, we can have a look at that. And if you want to listen to the show every week, then you can subscribe to us. You can do that in iTunes by searching for Pitch Vision Academy and clicking on the subscribe button, or you can go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link and find out the details on how to subscribe in any podcatching program. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers.
Cheers, fellas.